Welcome to the GBC Big Three podcast, a weekly podcast where we sit down and unpack three big questions raised from our Sunday sermon. I'm your host, Matt Willis, and I'm here with my co-host, Jessica Baker, fresh out of isolation. Mm-hmm. How are you, my friend?
Yeah.
I wanted to have...
It's been a time.
I wanted to have the like Destiny's Child, I'm a Survivor song playing, but we don't have the licensing for
it. It's what it feels like. Look, the Rona got me. It got me good.
It got you good. I got bronchitis.
All I can think is like, you got to be careful what you say.
You do.
Because I do remember saying out to the universe multiple times, like, come at me, Rona. I'm triple vaxxed. Bring it on.
It brought it.
Yeah. Yep. Can confirm third trimester of pregnancy and COVID. Not a fun time.
Not a vibe.
No.
Not a vibe.
Not a vibe. So at the moment, I mean, I'm a good... Well, 10 days out.
Mm.
I need a 3-hour nap after making the bed in the morning.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair
that's
enough.
Where I'm at. So this is smack bang in the middle of my nap time, actually. So we'll see how we go.
Oh, so servant-hearted.
Yeah, yeah. I will be going to bed after this.
Would you say you survived or you thrived?
Oh, barely survived. There was zero thriving.
But you got to do it with your hubby. That's nice.
Yeah, we both had the Rona.
Those who get an infectious disease together stay together, I hear.
He just had a little itty-bitty cough, a little bit of a sneezy, snotty nose. That's it. I've got no taste. I've got no smell. That was actually really sad because it was, you know, 8 a.m., just woken up in bed, returned to my bedside table for chocolates to comfort me.
Naturally.
Can't taste them.
No. No comfort.
No. And it's no Terry's joy. Chocolate orange. So it's a very strong orange flavor. Couldn't taste a thing. Had a little cry, but. But we've, that was the only tear shed. Mm. It was over the Terry's chocolate orange.
It's a valid reason.
Yeah.
It was cry over food on the reg. It's either so delicious or it's disappointing.
Yeah, or you just can't taste it all. But we're here. We've survived.
It's so great to have you back, my friend.
It's good to be back.
Well, for those of you who missed it, our senior pastor, Mark Reeder, preached during our Sunday services this past weekend, continuing in our series, Renovation, Rebuilding for Purpose. Mark spoke from the book of Nehemiah, speaking about the tension between waiting on God and acting out in faith. And you can listen to that message again through our regular GBC Sermons podcast. And so today in the Big Three, we're going to keep the conversation going from Mark's message. In a moment, we're going to be joined by Mark, and Jess and I will be putting the Big Three questions to him as we dive deeper into the invitation from this week's sermon. But for now, Jess, I'm interested on your thoughts coming out of Sunday's message.
Mm, loved the fact that we can all agree ScoMo is not the son of the gods.
Yes.
Just putting that out there that no one assumes that, which is great. But
that got an audible response in our evening service.
We love a bit of ScoMo banter. But look, Matt, to be honest, I didn't like it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Don't like it. Don't like Nehemiah. It's not a time.
Is it because you think that Mark was off theologically or you're just feeling challenged by his message?
Yeah, I'm feeling epically challenged. I don't like waiting and I don't like stopping to think about actions before I do them. I don't know if you've noticed that being my friend for a good 10 years now. I don't like sitting and pondering things. So as much as I see the benefits of it, this is going to be a real struggle for me. Because I'm like, no, let's get into it. Let's make a plan. Come on, let's go.
let's just go, guys. Come on, let's paint the church.
Let's go. Let's make a set. But thank the Lord I'm not the senior pastor. That's for sure. Because the Lord would just not be in the plans.
Wow. So this whole discernment process that we're going on as a church, I feel like you're just going to be a bit of a hot mess.
Yep. I can't say anything else
to
that.
We've got nothing else. It's just like, true. Yes, I will be in the corner with like paint swatches just being like, can we just change something? Can we add?
Yeah, can that's we renovate? Exactly what it's going to be. Yeah. Look, I love a renovation. I don't like the planning beforehand.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah. So this will be challenging. It will be good, but also amazing. Nehemiah is like the response of the king. You kind of, unless it's kind of spelled out to you, actually, yeah, that was a wild response.
Yeah, it is
of
a bit
like,
wild,
sure, you
right?
can have that. What else do you want?
Yeah, mate. Yeah. Let me give you a whole bunch of timber.
Yeah. You're great at sipping wine. Come be the mayor.
Like, let's build stuff, guys.
Yeah. So, I mean, impressive what happens when God's involved in the plans and you spend 4 months in prayer prior to.
Okay, so ultimately what we're taking is the waiting is an important part of this process.
Look, it's vital. It's vital. It's not something I enjoy, something I will learn to enjoy.
Something tells me it's going to be a continuous theme that we come back to throughout this series, which we will be coming back to at multiple times during the year. So you're just going to be reminded on a regular basis.
Keep checking in with me, seeing how I'm going.
See how you're going.
But it's going to be a challenge.
Love that.
Yeah.
Well, that's what we're here for, right? Mm-hmm. That's what we're here for. Well, I think it's time for us to start looking at the three big questions submitted through Slido this week. So Jess, what are our big three?
Question one, why do Christians have such fear when it comes to stepping out in action? I've got a few answers for that.
Yes. Although you do step out in action.
Blindly. Maybe I should have a little more fear. But question two, what does it mean if our plans go wrong?
Oh, savage.
That's coming at me. It means you didn't pray for long enough, Jess. And question three, what should we be on the lookout for when discerning God's plans and invitation?
Boom.
Very nice.
Love it. Good stuff. Well, three big questions. I'm keen for it. There's only one thing missing, and that's the man himself, Mark Rader. Welcome, Mark. How are you going?
I'm all right. Thanks, Matt. Welcome back, Jess.
Thank you. Good to be back. Good to be back.
Now, Rader, I normally ask how you're going.
Yep.
I have a follow-up question, but I'm hesitant to ask it because I don't want this podcast to go on forever.
People love this part.
They do love it. They do love it. But
we've had none of that genuine feedback from the listeners, but I'm telling you, they love it.
For those listening at home, there's something significant going on for you this week.
Mm.
Tomorrow night even.
Yes. Yes. Hockey trials.
Share with the group.
Hockey trials. So when I was a kid in Canada, skated lots, played lots of street hockey, but never played organized hockey.
On the streets.
Yeah, on the streets.
Just a gangster radar. Like.
Blades of Glory style.
Blades of Glory.
Yeah, neither of which are particularly helpful. But for a while now, probably for the last 10 or 15 years, I've thought.
That's a while.
It is a while.
Yeah.
I've thought, when I get some time, I'll make some space and I'll see if I can't play hockey. So, 10 or 15 years ago, I was coaching the girls' soccer. And so that was kind of taking up quite a bit of my time. And then just between a whole bunch of things, this is the year that I've decided. Like, I've got long service leave and I've got some study leave from the college. And so I've been skating and going to hockey school and figuring, getting lessons for the very first time in my life, which has been a lot of fun. And trials are tomorrow night. So that's when I find out.
It's a big day. If all your dreams can come true.
If all my dreams have come true or whether.
15 years of anticipation.
Are you gonna be able to build the wall or is it going to come crashing down?
I'm betting on the crashing down. So, I mean, the good news is so far I haven't pulled anything or at least not like seriously pulled something. So
listen,
like,
I'm just impressed when anyone exerts themselves physically and doesn't fall over into a hot mess like I do every single time.
Well, I have to say that I'm noticing my age now because, like 25-year-old me, if I'd kind of, gone on the ice 3 or 4 times, my fitness would have gone right back up. I've been on the ice 3 or 4 times. My fitness has, I think, gotten a little bit better, but the tools you would need to measure that improvement, they'd have to be pretty sensitive is what I'm getting at. So I'm like, I'm pretty sure I'm a little fitter than I was, but I can't really tell. So
I don't want to vomit as much today.
Right.
As long as you're not lying on the ground with your legs elevated at the end of a mums and bubs class like you were, Matt.
Yeah, I think I'll be
then
okay.
We're okay.
So very exciting. We're looking forward to it.
Good
Beautiful.
Luck.
Love it.
Thank
well,
you. Thank you.
We'll wait.
The church is behind you.
Oh, you'll hear about it.
The church, we are here for you.
That's right. We'll put that on our prayers.
I'm just afraid that if I don't make a team in Australia, like my Canadian passport will be revoked.
Mm. I think so, it should be.
So next week I might be under a different name. I'll shave my beard. the witness protection program for people escaping or not having enough hockey skills. So
love it.
I am making up for it by watching the Winter Olympics, though.
Oh, very good.
So yeah. I'm watching the Canadian women. They're ripping it up.
In hockey. Yeah, very good. I watched the curling the other day.
Oh.
I watched the Australians in the curling and it was outrageously depressing. They were not good.
Oh.
It's like, I wouldn't say that I enjoy curling, but I like watching it every 4 years for a bit. Because you watch it and.
Brings you back down to earth, really humbles you.
You just learn. It's just a different game. Like, I think that too often the Australian commentators miss an opportunity with the Winter Olympics because Australians are mad about sport. right? So like, I mean, we lawn bowling, you know, cricket, like we got all sorts of strange stuff. So like they're totally into it. Just explain it. Like the biathlon, I just think it's fascinating. So I watched a little bit of it last night and they're like skiing up and down hills for 2 kilometers and they have to lie down and shoot like at the, at, and when they're lying down, the targets are 4.5 centimeters.
I have no idea what this sport is.
What do you mean they're lying in the snow?
Cross country skiing and then shooting. So they ski a loop.
Where did that
and
combo then, come from?
Yeah. It's one of the ones that makes most sense.
I guess because you hiked and then you shot an animal.
Yeah, you would ski out and you'd shoot an animal and you'd come home, right?
So is that the purpose of sport though?
No, but like you can see the natural progression as opposed to like, you know, big air ski jumping, which is just completely boring.
Yeah, zero practical application.
Right. We digress.
We digress. Like, what you feared.
What you feared.
But we've learned something and now I need to go and watch this cross-country shooting. No,
biathlon. It's biathlon. The biathlon.
All right, all right. Okay.
All right, I'm going to bring it
You'll
in.
You'll like it. You'll like it.
Let's get into the big three.
So, Mark, there's a lot of things that, you know, off the top of our head, we could kind of say things that hold us back from stepping out in faith. But can you kind of explain to us why Christians have such a fear when it comes to stepping out in action?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, like as a person who's kind of naturally hesitant, I think there's kind of sometimes there's like a characteristic of people. And I think, you know, the church as a body tends to be kind of conservative. Most organizations, institutions become conservative. But I think that I think one of the biggest theological reasons is the belief that God has one plan for us, right? Mm. That he has one perfect plan and it's our job not to deviate from it, even though we're not entirely certain what it is.
Yeah.
And so there's that sense that if I get out of God's will, then I'm out of God's will.
Mm.
And how do I get back into God's will? And so we want to make decisions that are in God's will. But if I don't feel, you know, that really clear sense of peace, or there hasn't been that really significant confirmation, or I haven't had the angel or the prophecy or the, you know, the burning bush or whatever the case might be, then I'm like, I don't know if this is actually what God's calling me to. And so I think that really holds us back. And so I think one of the things that we need to be asking ourselves, I think, is, you know, how does God's will work? Right now, I'm not sure that there's any clear definitive answers on that because it's God's will. But it would seem that there are certain things that we can do within his will, his general will for our lives, that are good enough to do, right? Mm. I mentioned this last week in the podcast. I was part of a community of faith for a while that just was frozen in indecision. And I think part of it was this idea that God has a particular plan for this community of faith. And if we don't enact that, we're kind of out of God's will. And we don't want to be out of God's will. It doesn't sound like a good place to be. And so they just kind of kept waiting and going around the mountain again. Mm. And part of my reaction, because at that point I was just stepping outside of the community of faith and kind of transitioning into another, in part because I had a role, but kind of looking at it from the almost the outside and going, just pick something. Just pick something. Like, is God going to be upset if we decide that we're going to be all about sharing the good news rather than being all about prayer? You know, not that those are mutually exclusive, but, you know, like if our focus is one thing, is God going in heaven kind of going, oh, no, don't spend all that time praying for people. Ah, no, that's not my specific will for you. Like, you know, just kind of get on with it.
Yeah.
Now, there are times when there is a specific call of God, right? And then I think we want to try to get that right. But I think often it's the sense that God's got a plan and it's our job to know what that plan is and not step out of line, or we somehow jeopardize it, or we're at the very least we're out of God's will. And as I said, that's bad, right? Surely being out of God's will is bad. And I reckon that there are ways to think about God's will that are a little bit more open, a little bit more flexible in that sense, right? It comes back, you know, as these things often do, to things like predestination, right? Has God predestined everything, or is there a sense that he's kind of working with our free choices and whatnot? And you know, I think either way, God's capable of doing either of those things, running, you know, kind of writing the play, and then we're just kind of following the script, or kind of a little bit more improv, you know, kind of working with what he's given and what we do and how things pan out and all of those sorts of things, you know, and everything in between. So I think that's a fairly important hindrance or obstacle to us. You know, it's that the difference often, I mention this, I think, in the morning or at night. There's a difference between saying that God has written our story for us and saying that God offers to write us into his story, right? If we think that God's written our story, then he's written it all out for us. And again, we have to kind of follow the story. We don't want to miss, it's not a choose your own adventure. Like, we want to kind of do what God wants us to do. We want to look back on our lives and go, yeah, we made the right decisions at the right points in time. But I think if we flip it a bit and say that, no, God writes us into his story, then that gives us a little more freedom just to kind of go with what's in front of us and kind of go, here's an invitation. This looks like something that God would be certainly about. I'm going to have a swing. You know, I'm going to step into it. It seems like I'm the right person at the right time with at least the right heart. So even if I don't have the right skills, let's have a swing and see what happens. So I think that seems to me to one of the biggest reasons why people fear. Yeah. Stepping into
And it. I guess it makes sense when you hear a story like Nehemiah, COVID cough, sorry guys. Because if God wasn't a part of that story, then there's no way the king would have had that reaction and that response. And so you think, like, unless God is in this, if I've just picked my own little adventure and off I pop, it's not going to work, or it's not going to have the impact that I want. Yeah. So it's really important to have God involved, but there's no like right or wrong. He's not going to be a part of this at all if I pick the wrong thing.
Yeah. And I think we sometimes fear that that's the case, right? Like, if I am outside of the will of God, and you know, I mean, again, we can see the truth in that. Like, if I'm, you know, living my own life, doing my own thing, making my own decisions and really not living any way like how God has designed us to live in relationship with him. Well, okay, then I am well outside of God's will. And you kind of go, okay, well, fair enough. Then things aren't going to work out for you. But I think if we are in good faith, trying to follow Jesus and kind of take advantage of the invitations that are before us, I think God pays that, so to speak, right? Like, I think God's like, yeah, I can work with that. You know, you've done the right thing. You've kind of, you know, like, I think about the parable of the talents, right? You know, gave five to one and was it three to the other and one to the last. And then, you know, the first two double their money. But we're not told how. Like, the king doesn't ask them how. He just says, here, take this money and do something with it.
Yeah.
And they double it. And we have no idea if they had a diversified portfolio, whether they went down to the pokies and managed to double it all in one night, right?
Drag queen bingo.
But we don't know how they did it. We don't know whether it was a slow burn, whether it happened quickly. We don't know whether there were losses in that. Did the guy with five end up with 25 and then kind of lost it to 10 and kind of came to the king kind of going, I doubled it. I won't tell you how much I did have. But, you know, like, we're just not told the how. It was the steward this. And again, I don't want to read too much into the kind of argument from silence, but there does seem to be freedom, right? You go figure it out. And I'm not sure that's the point of the parable, but I think that there is, I think you find that in the way God engages. Like, I've laid out the way. You know how you ought to live in relationship to me and to others, so live that way. Go ahead.
I think a lot of the fear also comes from something that's quite culturally common, which is this idea of having everything organized before you make a step, like before you make a choice.
Yeah.
You know, my wife and I got married very young. We did not have anything organized. But like, you know, you hear it a lot with marriage. Like, I need to have the right job, the right house, like the right amount of money. And like when I've ticked all those boxes, then we can get married or then we can have kids or, you know, whatever the situation might be, it is quite culturally acceptable and quite culturally common, I think, that the expectation is that you have a degree of certainty before you take a step forward. And I think, you know, I think you're absolutely right. I think there's more breadth to the will of God than maybe we give credit to. And so there is room to kind of move in that space and test, like, hey, is this where I'm meant to be going, or is it over here? But I think even before that, we need to challenge that mentality of, you know, we want the burning bush. Mm-hmm. We want the mm-hmm. angel at the end of our bed, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And we want to know that every option is kind of, we've thought it all through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's because, like, it's very countercultural to step out in faith.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the society around us would kind of deem it as foolish.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, we want that credibility, I think, outside of a Christian community mm-hmm. into our wider community of like, hey, I'm not stupid for mm-hmm. doing this.
Mm-hmm.
But I think sometimes with the way our culture works, a step of faith can feel like stupidity because we don't have all the answers.
And it comes back, you know, like not comes back to, but like I used a couple of proverbs to kind of think a little bit about the things that Nehemiah was grappling with. And this is another one, right? Look before you leap, but he who hesitates is lost.
Yeah.
Right. And they're both, there's times when you don't have time to line everything up.
Mm.
You've got to make the decision. You got to do it now.
Yeah.
And there are other times don't jump.
Yeah.
Like you got to stop for a moment, think. And often we're not very wise.
Mm.
Like we're not very wise. And that's not to say that we're automatically then foolish, but our timing's not great. You know, so sometimes I think there's an invitation to move a lot faster.
Mm.
And we're like, no. I want to kind of look before I leap.
Yeah.
And we're hesitant to do that. And then sometimes I think we jump too soon on stuff,
mm.
you know, where it's like, oh, my heart's really in. I go, oh, that must be.
Yep.
And off we go. And we don't do any of the waiting. And so getting our timing right on some of that stuff, I think, is really critical too.
So how do we go about doing that then? Like if wisdom is the thing that we need.
Mm. Yeah, please explain.
Please explain.
Yeah. Look over there. I mean, I think that, you know, wisdom often is associated with experience, of course, right?
Yeah.
You know, and biblically, the wisdom that we find in scripture is not, it's not revelation, it's more observation, right? So you don't find, you know, that it's a prophet who speaks these words from God. It's not an angel who delivers the wisdom. It's basically people who recognize that God has built the world, both the material and the moral world, kind of observing the world and going, these are the things that seem to work.
Yeah.
And so therefore there is an element of experience that we need to determine and discern that this is a moment we just have to get at it.
Yeah.
We can't wait. Mm. The opportunity's here. And whether that's because it's a crisis and we need to step into something, or, you know, and in a crisis, I think we understand, well, we can't just kind of go and line everything up. We just got to get into it. And there are times when I think it's obvious when we have to wait, we want to kind of get this right because the consequences are quite severe if we don't.
Mm.
It's that middle area where the timing becomes more problematic. And I think that's where we want to be bringing other people in. I think that's probably the best way to do
yeah.
it. I mean, there are very, I mean, outside of a crisis, there are very few situations that we face where we have to act like right now, like we have a nanosecond to decide yes or no. You take the blue pill or red pill, right? Like, you know,
great reference.
Thank you. You know, you've got to, you usually have enough time to kind of pause, take a deep breath and go, okay, wait, I'm just going to call somebody.
Hmm.
What do you think?
Yeah.
You know, this feels like a jump now moment. Mm. This is what I'm sensing. Mm. Feels like there's an opportunity that I shouldn't miss. And I don't feel like I should, like, what do you think?
Yeah.
And I think that's probably the simplest way for us to access that. So
no, I think there's a great invitation in sharing wisdom. Because you're right, like it comes from experience, but you can't expect to experience everything before you're going to need to exercise some wisdom.
No, that's right.
So
that's right.
The opportunity to be in community and be a community who share experience and share the wisdom learned in those experiences has a collective impact.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, if I can use you as an example, I mean, you were just you and Samantha were looking to buy a house.
Yes, we were. Oh, and gosh, I'm a hot mess.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry to bring it up.
Triggered.
Totally triggered.
Someone hold me.
But as someone listening to you, you just kept saying you're talking to your mom, you're talking to your dad, you're talking to people you trusted about the process because it felt really rushed, right? And so it was one of those, you know, your agent saying, he who hesitates is lost.
Yeah.
And everything inside you was saying, oh, look before you leap. But there was a balance in that. Mm. Like there were times you got to kind of line some things up so you're ready to leap when you can. And so I think that, you know, the fact that you were calling and reaching out to people and kind of going, can you talk me through this? And, you know, like I've read this document, I have no idea what he does. All those conversations, I think, are a good example of being in the moment and kind of going, I know that one of these proverbs applies.
Yes.
Right? There's a path to wisdom. I've got the two of them in my hand, but it feels like I've got one coin and it's a matter of flipping it and kind of I'm leaping apparently. Yeah. And so I think that just that pausing and just kind of going, I've got a little bit of time. Just take a breath. I need to touch base with somebody who I know has experienced something like this. I think that's a really critical way forward.
Yeah.
And I think practice in discerning God's voice leading up to those moments is really important. If you're not invested, like you're not spending time in the word, you don't kind of know what things align with God's plans and purposes, then you've got no idea when something crops up of like, I actually don't know which path to take because I don't know what God's plans would be.
Right. That's right. And I think that's, you know, there's self-awareness, there's recognition of God's voice, there's a knowledge of his character and his purposes where you kind of go, yep, this feels like a God thing. And I think, you know, observing the patterns that God has used in our lives before, kind of going, actually, this sort of thing happens to me a lot. Like, I wonder if this might be a trend line that I should follow, you know, and going from there.
Yeah, good stuff. Well, let's get on to question two. So, Rita, we get to the point where we're willing to not hesitate and step out in faith. What does it mean when those plans go wrong?
Oh, man.
Heavy.
So it is.
to
some degree, that question strikes at a very personal experience that I and my family had. When we moved from the United States, from Canada to the United States, where my family still are, we moved for my dad to take a pastoral role in a church. And the community of faith that we were a part of was praying for us, and we were praying about it, and we went down, and the community that we were thinking about joining was praying about it. And there was a really clear sense that this was what God wanted. Like this was God's plan.
Yeah.
That this is what was next for us. And like I remember feeling it. Like they flew us down as a family to Wisconsin, and we kind of spent the weekend with, you know, a number of the families and met the church in that sense. And as we were flying home, I remember really clearly going, yeah, this is it. Like it was just a really bizarre feeling. So we moved down, and within 2 years, the church had completely imploded.
Whoa.
Yeah. Completely imploded.
Yeah.
My brother, I think, kind of got lost in his faith journey for a while. I look back and see like my mom and dad, and I think my dad has enormous pastoral capacity, but he had just taken a beating in it. And I think was really hesitant to really fully step into his gifting after that because of what had happened.
Yeah.
I've never been able to reconcile it. I've never been able to reconcile it. I've never been able to say, oh yeah, God brought something good out of that in the end. I'm like, nope. Just weird.
Just a hot mess.
Just a hot mess.
Yeah.
So my family's still down there. My brother's found his way back to faith or to a more vibrant faith. You know, my mom and dad are still active in ministry, which is great. But I look back at that move and I think to myself, I have no idea what that was all about. Yeah. Because if it was God's plan for us to go down and just get screwed over in this situation, that doesn't seem like the plans of God.
Yeah. It doesn't align with
it doesn't seem to align with it. Yeah. It doesn't align with what we assume will happen if we are in alignment with God's plans, right? Like, because that is the road to success, right? If you're going to be successful in life in any way, shape or form, surely it's when you're in God's will.
Yeah.
Now, you know, as I said, I haven't been able to reconcile that. I've just never been able to reconcile it. But there are some, I guess, some components around which I kind of have kind of padded that experience, you know, things like, you know, the example of Jesus who was perfectly in God's will and suffered and who tells us that if you are my followers, you too will suffer. So to some degree, the sure sign that we are following Jesus, and this is not necessarily a sure sign because sometimes we suffer because we're idiots, not because we're being particularly faithful, but, you know, but there's that opens the door to being in God's will and things not working out.
Yeah.
I think that a second area for me has been, I guess thinking a little bit about the fact that God's plans don't always seem to come to fruition, which like strikes at the heart of like the sovereignty of God and all those sorts of things. But, you know, one of the most profound passages, I think, in the Old Testament to grapple with this question is when Saul is rejected as the first king of Israel.
Yeah.
You know, God had appointed Saul, empowered him with the Spirit, changed his heart. And then Saul made a couple of, I guess, really big mistakes. I don't see how they're bigger than David's adultery and murder. I don't quite see
but
it.
But that's neither here nor
that's
there.
That's neither here nor there. And then God says to Samuel, the prophet, I regret that I made Saul king. And it just goes totally pear-shaped for Saul. And Saul didn't necessarily want the job.
Yeah.
And, you know, and yet... and then
that felt called to it.
And it was affirmed by God and then kind of falls out of favor with God. Yeah. And it's a hot mess. And yet in the midst of that, you know, God has another plan, but that plan that God was involved in, and now how do you handle that? You know, some would say that was all part of the plan of God or whatever the case might be. I think I have a slightly more open view of God's sovereignty.
Yeah.
That God has in some ways decided to limit himself in terms of the things that he chooses to know about the future.
To give us
the genuine, freedom to make genuine decisions. And sometimes those decisions are really good ones and sometimes they're not. And sometimes our response when we fail is really bad, like Saul's, or sometimes our response when we fail is really good, like David's was.
Yeah.
And that seems to be the big difference. You know, David was, you know, as soon as he got called out on, he's like, yep, fair enough. You know,
I'm a bonehead.
And he repents. Whereas Saul's like, oh, I didn't really do that. It's not what you think it is. It's, you know, like,
good try, Saul.
Yeah, you know,
we've all been there.
But at the same time, there's an example of just kind of going, that didn't work out.
Yeah.
And what do we do with that? And so again, I don't have any answers to it. I think when things go wrong, I think it is worth asking, did I mishear God?
Yeah.
Like, I think that's worth asking you know, in the aftermath of it to kind of go, did I allow my desire for this opportunity or the thought that this would be great for my family or whatever the case might be, did I allow that to overwhelm my hearing?
Yeah.
It might not even be from the get-go. Maybe that initial decision was definitely in line with God, but somewhere along the way, like Saul or whatever, you fall out of favor or you miss the mark or you kind of get led astray. And that's maybe where it, like, to reflect where it goes wrong.
You know, and maybe that was the purpose of God, that little community of faith needed to stop being in the community of faith, that it was, I mean, it was obviously dysfunctional. So maybe it was for the best that happened and that dad was called there to oversee that. But it would have been nice to know, you know, that what you're doing you're going there to shoot the dog. You're not going there to become a mega church, right? You're like, you know, not that I ever thought we were going to become a mega church, but you know, like, it's not how you expect it to be.
Yeah.
So I think that is a really critical question. Like, yeah, I think it's appropriate to ask, you know, I don't think this is the answer, but it's appropriate to ask, you know, did I fail in some way? You know, not in the sense of, you know, ultimate failure, but just in the sense of, did I screw up in this thing? Like, was I as faithful as I could have been? And again, not to say that, you know, like if dad had done something a little bit differently or a lot differently, that it would have been different. Who knows? I think it was a pretty dysfunctional mess when we got there. But, you know, like, again, you know, and from everything I saw, like, oh, I didn't see my dad do anything that was particularly poor, you know? So it's like, I don't know, it beats me what that's all about. So I think we have to ask some of those questions, but ultimately we have to kind of give it to God.
Yeah.
And say, all right, Lord, I don't want to be scarred by this decision so that I'm not willing to say yes to you next time.
Yeah.
Like, to kind of go, God, you have not failed me in this. This didn't work. This all fell apart. It went badly. It was a failure. Mm. I probably contributed in some way. Mm. Other people may have contributed in some way. I may have misheard you. I don't want to become hard-hearted though, so that this is the last time I listen to you. Mm. Want to be ready the next time and say, I'm going to have another crack. Mm. You know, I'm going to take the invitation. I think that becomes our response again, right?
Yeah. Awesome.
It's that response to go, okay, yeah, that was a disaster. Mm. So what do we learn from that? Because we know, I mean, not just in biblically, but you know, just anecdotally, not everything works out for those who are followers of Jesus. If it did, boy, evangelism would be easy. Right? Be at my life. Yeah. I just go from strength to strength. Mm. Mm? That's Jesus. So, you know, you can keep bumbling along, screwing up and having stuff go wrong. Fine. But, you know, look at my life. Yeah. It's just brilliant. Well, who wouldn't be a Christian? Mm. But the reality is that for Christians, they experience depression.
They get decapitated. They get shoved in prison.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Wow, that escalated quickly. It's like,
geez. In the Bible, to follow like the disciples, it didn't end up great for most of them.
True, true. Yeah, but it's that. There's oppression, there's persecution. There's
also depression. Yeah.
Well, you know, and sickness and early death and leadership failures and moral failures and crises and like, you know, so, you know, there's no sense that we are protected from the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. You know, like it's just kind of the way it is. So
it's a bummer.
Yeah.
But trusting God in the outcome of that, I think becomes really critical.
Yeah, absolutely.
And picking yourself back up, getting on your knees, praying again and go for it again.
Yeah. Good. I'm glad because I was ready to end that question, but it felt really low. You guys picked it back up. I feel
that's what we're here for.
Feel ready to go again. Let's go on to question three.
So I haven't heard many of my friends have a burning bush moment recently or an amazing vision that has amazing clarity or hearing the voice of God clearly. But what should we be looking for when discerning God's plans and invitation?
Yeah, this is one of those questions we keep circling back around, not just in the series. Mm. Like it seems like this comes up every four or five episodes, you know, or something similar.
Give us the equation.
Yeah, that's right.
How do we know?
That's right. I think that there's, I suspect that there are a handful of things and a handful of areas that it's useful to look at. You know, we talked last week a bit about, you know, that emotional, the heart response. And I think that's a valid thing. We don't want to be led by our emotions, but we do want our emotions to play a part in it, you know, because we know that if our heart is into something, oh man, like we're in.
Yeah.
Right. And so it is appropriate for us to be asking, is my heart set on fire by this? Like, is there some sense of passion here? Is there something that goes yes to this opportunity, this situation? Well, that's probably worth exploring. Now, we might be after it because it's just going to make me rich or, you know, it's going to make me look amazing or whatever the case might be. And that's probably not the voice of God. But I think paying attention to our emotional response to something. I think there's an element where we want to be thinking about it, using our logic and our reason. You know, is this a decision that makes some sense given, you know, I'm married and got some kids and I've got a mortgage and like, you know, like, does this make sense in my life stage and context and all those sorts of questions. And again, sometimes God's call on our life may not make sense. That's fine. But I think we have to ask those questions. Then we want to be asking other people, and I think this is where there's also a self-awareness component of kind of saying not just how my heart responds or how my head responds, but also to kind of go, do I feel like I've got the gifts and abilities to step into this? Mm. And that's a tricky one because God often uses the least and the weak to accomplish his tasks. And at the end of the day, you know, our great strength doesn't really help God. No. You know, like it's not like he's like, wow, I really needed that 10%, you know.
But can we make ourselves believe that he does?
I think that's where we get into trouble, actually. Okay. You know, but there is a sense of kind of going, and maybe we don't have all the skills, and this comes back to that whole, you know, look before you leap, or, you know, he who hesitates is lost. You know, we may not have all the skills, but we kind of go, okay, well, do I have enough to start?
Yeah, you know? If God's calling you to be a doctor in Cambodia, but you're an accountant, probably not.
Exactly.
Probably not the call.
Yeah. Regardless of how well your heart goes, and your head goes, yeah, I've got lots of money. I can do all that. It's like at the end of the day, I just don't have the necessary skills. That's right. Well, you think about
qualifications,
you know, or you think about, you know, missionaries who have to learn the language of the country that they're going to, you know, where it's like, okay, I have a passion for it and I have the skills to learn a language and to live in a different place and whatever the case might be. So I think there's that, and we want to bounce that off other people and kind of go, does this feel like something God's calling me to? Do you think that this kind of fits with who I am and whatnot? So I think those are fairly helpful ways to kind of be about it. You know, people talk quite commonly about, you know, having a sense of peace with a decision. I think that there's some validity in that. You know, I think sometimes what God calls us to will freak us right out, you know, and so I think we have to be careful what we mean by peace.
Yeah.
You know, like if I don't think what we're after is confidence that it's, oh, I'm going to smash it. I think it's peace that God's calling me into this, right?
I'm terrified, but it should be okay.
Story of my life.
Well, like I remember when I stepped into the senior pastor role here, I had never really thought about being a senior pastor until kind of that moment in time. And there was a real sense for me that, like, I wasn't terrified, but I also knew that, oh, this is going to be a steep learning curve. And I found that in the first little while in particular, I really enjoyed it. I was exhausted. I had no idea what I was doing. I was learning way too much, well, probably not learning enough, but I needed to learn something every day. But I was coming home going, this is fun.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when I thought about it, I was like, how can this be fun? Like, how can this be fun? But I think there was, for me, that felt like the sense of peace.
Yeah.
Right? That shalom, where this is how things ought to be right now.
Yeah.
Like, it was the right time for me to be a little bit stretched and a little bit stressed and a little bit tired and a little bit like, oh, I'm drinking from a fire hose. Like, you know, but it was the right time. And so there was a sense that, no, this is it.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a restful state. It wasn't a state of feeling like, yeah, no worries. It was just a sense that, no, this is where I ought to be.
Yeah.
And there's a time and place. This is wisdom, right? There's a time to be flat, chat, stinking busy. There's a time to not to be.
Yeah.
There's a time to feel in over your head. And there's a time that you probably want to be on top of things.
Yeah.
You know, and knowing when those times are is, I think, or sensing when that time is, I actually think can be a real confirmation. Now, the problem, of course, is I had stepped into the role, so it's kind of too late if it was the wrong timing. It's kind of like,
I don't feel peace. I don't feel
any peace. So, but I think it is a valid, that sense of, yeah, no, this feels right. It just feels right. You know, like going back to my family, we felt that was the right decision to make. And in some ways, that has perhaps been a sustaining principle through the lot, to kind of go, okay, it didn't work out at all how we thought it would. In lots of ways, it was a complete disaster. Not sure that I can look back and go, oh, look at the fruit of that wonderful decision. Like, if I get a chance to have a one-on-one with Jesus at some point, that'll be my question. Like, can you explain Wisconsin to me? And not the state, but like that decision. Like, what was that all about? But the idea that we felt a sense of peace, that it was, this is where we're supposed to be. That's actually quite sustaining. Even when it goes pear-shaped, it creates a tension of kind of going, I didn't think that this would turn out this way, but, and go back and say, no, we felt that we were doing the right thing. We felt that this is what God had called us to. And there's something in that. So I think there's a kind of a combination of things that I think we want to be looking for to sensing the what God's invitation is for us. And I think, you know, corporately, as we're engaging as a community of faith, I think it'd be a little bit more interesting to discern, but I think it begins with, you know, like, how has God invited us as a community of faith to be involved in the past? How have we responded in the past? Now, God may call us to something completely and utterly new, but there tend to be patterns in individuals' lives. And there tend to be patterns, I think, in organizations and institutions. So, you know, reflecting on, so what's God done in the past? How have we gone? What are the opportunities in front of us? What could we say yes to? What grabs our heart and goes, oh, yeah, like, we are excited about that. I think all of those things, I think, kind of play a part in that role of discernment.
Right on.
Nice.
Well, Raina, thanks so much. Like, it's, what are we, 2 weeks into this series?
2 weeks
just
in.
Just 2 weeks, but like, there seems to be a real clear sense of where, maybe not a clear sense of where we're going, but how we're going to get to where we're supposed to be going.
And why the process is important, I think.
Which I'm stoked by. So
yeah, great.
Yeah. Thanks so much for joining us for another Big Three.
And
thanks,
good guys. Luck tomorrow night.
Yes. Oh,
thank you very much.
Our prayers go with you.
Oh, they better. I'm going to need that peace. See you guys.
All right, Jessica Baker.
Matthew Willis.
Lots in that. Lots in that. Mm-hmm. What stood out for you? What's your take home? What are you feeling?
I liked the discussion around question two, what happens when our plans go wrong? Because I think we can all kind of see something we thought we were really gung-ho about and God's in this and this is great. And it can really leave us second-guessing maybe God's power or his strength or his involvement in any of it. And so it's good to know, like, just things go wrong for Christians and that's okay. And that doesn't mean that God wasn't involved or you weren't listening to him initially. Or I like that.
No, yeah, I found that quite powerful as well. And I think just even like naming the tension of sometimes the clarity may not come to the extent that we want it to. Like, hey, God, why did that happen? Or did I misinterpret? But I think it's important that we have a culture of kind of acknowledging it, like maybe learning from it, but not allowing it to stop us from taking the next step when it presents itself. And I think, again, you know, to go back to something that we said earlier, like that whole sense of needing everything kind of organized beforehand, needing to have all the ducks in the row, I think there's always a need to have answers as well. Mm-hmm. And particularly when we have plans that go wrong, it feels like we've got none of the answers, which then makes us, you know, question everything and, well, I'll never do it again. But sometimes we just need to sit in that, well, actually I don't have the answers of what happened there, but that's not going to stop me moving on here.
Yeah. And hopefully in a year's time we don't need to play this episode again and reflect on what went wrong. That we'll have a little bit more success than Wisconsin. We won't implode in a year.
I mean,
although I don't know, with Mark involved.
Oh, well, thank you so much, my friend. It's great to have you back.
It's good to be back.
It's great. Out of ISO. Well, we'll catch you next week for the Big Three.
See you then.
Well, if you want to be a part of the conversation, make sure that you're there at one of our services this Sunday, either online or on site, and that you snap the Slido QR code or follow the link before the sermon to get involved. If you've enjoyed the Big Three podcast today, take the time to give a star rating and be sure to subscribe to stay up to date with all future episodes. Well, thanks for joining us for this week's Big Three and our deep dive into God's invitation for us all. Remember, there's no thought too small, no question too big.